All right. Well, is anybody excited for Children's Church to be back next week? Yeah. Good to see Katie and Nick. They have given their summer to help lead all the ministry efforts at Camp Challenge in Bedford. So I see quite a few people from Camp Challenge here this morning. Thank you guys so much. Let's give them a quick hand here. We are hopeful to do more to honor you. The third Sunday in August is what we're thinking right now with all that's going on. But thank you so much. So good to see Katie and Nick and everybody else back. And we're looking forward to Children's Church. So kids, since this is the last Sunday that we have this summer before Children's Church comes back next Sunday, I have these. The Mott family has very graciously agreed to donate fruit snacks. So at the end of the service, if you pick up on my, I'm going to reference a cartoon today. Cora, will you raise your hand? My daughter Cora is down here. She's in the youth group now, but she's going to, youth group, woohoo. She's going to be passing out fruit snacks. If you can tell what cartoon I reference or tell her your favorite cartoon or just something about church. Got it? Something. We'll see if we can do this. All right. So, there were two brothers who lived in a small town, and they were very, very wealthy and very crooked. They were dishonest. They were thieves. They took advantage of people. So they gained their money by exploitation, so they didn't have a lot of friends. One of the brothers died, and it was going to be hard to find like a church that would host the funeral. But the brother that was left found one pastor, and he made an offer. He offered a lot of money to a pastor who would officiate his brother's funeral on one condition. The pastor had to say that his brother was a saint. The pastor thought about the proposal. Sometimes when you do funerals, you have to do some mental gymnastics. The pastor had done them before. He thought, okay, can I do that? Yeah, I can. No problem. So he agreed to the offer. A couple days later at the funeral, the wealthy brother who was still alive was nervous. He didn't want the pastor to back out on the deal. And he said, are you going to keep the agreement? The pastor assured him, yep, got it. I'm going to be faithful to my end of the deal. Hopefully you will be to yours. So a few minutes later, they start the funeral. And the pastor begins the service by saying, brothers and sisters, we have gathered here today for the funeral of this man. And I have to tell you, he was a liar, he was a cheat, he was a bully. But compared to his brother, he was a saint. So sometimes I think like we've been going through this series called Story of the Kingdom. And we've been looking at these people, and especially like we've got into the kings now. And sometimes it might feel like, for example, David was an adulterer, a murderer, a polygamist. But compared to the other kings, he was a saint. Sometimes it maybe feels like that when we're looking at these biblical stories. And just to kind of do just a quick little retrace of the series, this is the last Sunday that we're doing this. It's been really good this summer. To focus on the story of the kingdom. This is from a book by Vaughn Roberts called God's Big Picture. And in the book, he talks about different types of kingdoms. He kind of condenses them, the period. It starts with number one, the pattern kingdom. That lasts for two chapters. It's in Genesis. God sets things up. There's a pattern kingdom. That leads to the parish kingdom, starting in Genesis 3. And then we've kind of weaved our way throughout that, talking about promised kingdom, partial kingdom, prophesied kingdom. And last week, Pastor Emily, last couple of weeks, she's been talking about the kings and the prophets. And as I've been thinking about where we are and what we've been talking about with these different kings and most of them being corrupt and the messages of the prophets warning people, I thought of one of my favorite childhood movies, Disney's Robin Hood. Hint, hint. Disney's Robin Hood. And I was thinking about the storyline of Robin Hood and how the king's brother takes over. He's a corrupt king. He gets rich by exploiting people, and the people are suffering as they wait for the promised king, a good king, to return and restore justice. And there is a song in this movie that came to my mind, and it goes, every town has its ups and downs. Some of you remember this, right? Sometimes, sing it. Sometimes ups outnumber the downs, but not in Nottingham. And not in Israel either, right? Like, there's always these ups and downs, and that's what we've been looking at in the biblical story. They started with an up, and it very quickly there was a down. And we see these ups and downs, and we wrestle with this. So as we talked about last week, the prophets, and one of the roles that the prophets played with the kings and the people who, they just kept falling into things, idolatry, evil practices. They would get into these just terrible things where they were exploiting people, they were abandoning their faith, breaking their covenants, doing all kinds of wicked things. And the prophets kept coming to warn, saying, you're not living up to your side of the covenant. And you're in danger if you don't repent of being exiled. So we see the prophets, and then the kingdoms had split into two, northern kingdom, and they didn't last too long. And eventually, the Assyrian Empire came, destroyed the northern kingdom. It would never be rebuilt, carried them off into exile. But the southern kingdom was different, Judah, because not all of their kings were bad. In fact, the kings of Judah were in the line of David, and there had been a really amazing promise that a prophet named Nathan gave to King David, and it was this. Look at 2 Samuel 7:16. This is a message from the Lord to David. Your house and your kingdom will endure forever before me. Your throne will be established forever. So when Assyria came and took out the northern kingdom, who was a different line than David, that was to be expected almost. But because the promise was not just to all the kings, it was through the line of David. So David's line did withstand the Assyrian assault. But unfortunately, a little over 100 years later, there was another empire that rose up called Babylon. And somehow David's line was destroyed. The people of the southern kingdom of Judah or Israel, southern kingdom of Israel were exiled into Babylon. How could this be? I mean, this is the promise. How could it be? David clearly had a promise from the Lord that his house and his kingdom would endure forever, and yet it didn't. It was paused. So fast forward now. Today we're going to focus on the exile. 538 BC, Babylon didn't stay in power. Another king named Cyrus, who came from the empire of Persia, they had defeated Babylon. And in 538 BC, Cyrus issued a decree that the people of Israel, the people who were exiled, could go back to their homeland. They could rebuild Jerusalem and rebuild the temple that had been destroyed by Babylon. When the temple was destroyed, this was a temple that was made by Solomon. Solomon, they thought that the promise was just like it was going to last forever, but it didn't. It seemed like God's promise had been violated, but maybe now that they're returning to Jerusalem to rebuild it and to rebuild the temple, maybe now other prophecies would be fulfilled. In fact, one of them during the exile, Ezekiel prophesied of a new temple that would far surpass the glory of the old temple of Solomon. So they returned. But it wasn't really all that many. There's a problem. They were allowed to go back, but a lot of them got used to Babylon. They were doing pretty well. But only a few went back to the homeland of Palestine to rebuild Jerusalem, rebuild the walls. They were led by a builder named Nehemiah. And they were led by a priest named Ezra who reminded people, get back to the law, return to the covenant. And even though Ezra reaffirmed the law, and Nehemiah was able to build a wall, when they started the temple up, it was obvious. For those who knew what the glory of the temple was beforehand, it was nothing compared to what it used to be. That prophecy made by Ezekiel that the glory of the new temple, the new Jerusalem, would far surpass Solomon's and David's, it wasn't happening. It was so disappointing to people. In fact, the book of Nehemiah, where he had succeeded in building a wall despite lots of opposition, and he stayed focused on the mission, and there's a lot of inspiration by Nehemiah. It ends with disappointment because he's trying to figure out why the people's hearts didn't change. That was another prophecy of Ezekiel, that the Lord would come in, there'd be a new covenant with new hearts, and it wasn't happening. And other prophets came in, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, and they all had similar messages to the previous prophets before the exile. It was, guys, we're going in the wrong direction. If we don't repent, bad things are going to happen. And so there's all this frustration. Also similar to the prophets, however, though, is that there was a message of hope. That, yes, this isn't it. This isn't where we're supposed to be. We're on a down right now. But there is a time, there is an up that we can look forward to. There is reason for hope. Just because it seems like the promise to David is broken, just because Ezekiel's prophecies aren't coming true right now, doesn't mean they never will come true. So for right now, you kind of see the books of the Old Testament. Go ahead and take a look at those. I don't know if you can read there, if you can see that, but the last books of the Old Testament, kind of look at those. And again, this is going to be confusing for just a second, but wait till we explain. So there are 39 books in the Hebrew Scriptures. Now, this may be a little confusing today because the Roman Catholic Church has a little bit different arrangement in the way that the Roman Catholic Church arranges the Bible. And the Protestants, we're kind of part of that Protestant group, has a different arrangement of how we put the books of the Bible together. But so in the Bible that we use that has 66 books, there are 39 in the Old Testament. Now you would think, since we're on exile and talking about the end of the Old Testament period today, that we would be in somewhere around 30 to 39. But instead, we're going to do something that may seem really confusing, and we are going to back up to our books, 13 and 14, which are 1st and 2nd Chronicles. Now, why would we do such a thing? That seems crazy. Well, let's look at the Hebrew Bible. So I think we have another one. If you can see this is, I know, super small. If you have it on your phone, it helps. But the Hebrew Bible ends with Chronicles. Now, we've divided that in our Bible, 1st and 2nd Chronicles. But in the Hebrew Bible, the Hebrew Scriptures, the way it's arranged is that Chronicles is the last book of the Bible. Why? Well, we'll get to that a little bit later. But first, I want to acknowledge a source that I've used really heavily. This is a video from the Bible Project on Chronicles. So the Bible Project, and I think we have a slide. There's even a link. So if you're following along on the Bible app, there's a link straight to it. But these are really helpful videos that give us the context of the background of biblical books, ideas, and in this one, I've used this very heavily and highly recommend it. So having said that, to us, if we were just looking in our English Bibles and we were looking at 1 Chronicles and 2 Chronicles as books 13 and 14, they follow 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel, and 1 Kings and 2 Kings. And it would almost seem to us, if we were just reading Chronicles next, is like, oh, this is just a recap. Some of it is material from Samuel, and some of it is material from Kings. So it's basically a recap. It's just a different way of saying it. They've condensed in editing. And while that may be a little bit true, there are some important differences that we're going to look at today. One difference is that Chronicles, when it's telling the story of the kings, and it talks about David, it leaves out the stories about the northern kingdom, whereas Kings talk about that. So Chronicles focuses just on the southern kingdom, the line of Judah, the line of David, and the books of Samuel and Kings, also they're talking about more unified Israel. So they're covering northern kingdom, southern kingdom, everything. Chronicles, another interesting thing is that they put only positive stories about David. Samuel and Kings have positive and negative stories about David. And they were written at a different time. Chronicles was written for the post-exilic community to explain that God was still faithful. So it's telling the stories of the kings and saying, we're in exile because we've been disobedient to the covenant. This started with Moses. There's a story here. It was conditional. Moses said, if you break the covenant, it'll lead to exile. All that happened. But we know from what it says in Chronicles, that it was written, I said that backwards, I'm sorry. In Samuel and Kings, they were written for the exilic community to explain why the exile happened. So I explained it. Chronicles, though, however, was written after the exile, after the people returned. So there are parts of Chronicles that talk about after they came back home, after the period of the kings and the exile. And to explain, even though it was disappointing, why God was still faithful. Because it was written hundreds of years later, so the people knew that Jerusalem had been rebuilt in the temple, and it was just nothing compared to the glory of the old one. So there are differences. So why would the Hebrew Bible end with Chronicles? Well, because of when it was written, for one, but also it summarizes the entire story of the Old Testament. The first word of Chronicles is Adam. It is Adam. And then the last paragraph of Chronicles tells about Israel's return from exile. So it tells the stories of the kings. It tells about key people. It kind of recaps the Old Testament because it was written, again, when Jerusalem and the temple were rebuilt, but things were not going well. So what the author did, the compiler of Chronicles, was he reshaped the story to put emphasis on David. The book of Chronicles starts with 9 chapters of genealogy. How many of you would like to read that today? Can I have a reader come up and read all the names of 9 chapters? Doesn't that sound so fascinating? It would be boring to most of us in English, but there is a point. And Chronicles emphasize 2 key lineages. David, that he was in the line of Judah because there was a ruler that was coming from David, and the priesthood. Aaron, Moses' brother, was the priest, and the priesthood followed in his lineage. So Chronicles is emphasizing the kingly line and the priestly line. And it's really put in there very, very specific for a purpose. We already talked about how it leaves out the negative of David, but it adds also positive stories of David. And it adds David's preparations for the temple that aren't found in Samuel and Chronicles. We have some extra because it's emphasizing the royal line and the temple, the priestly line. So why would the author of Chronicles reshape the story, hide David's flaws? You can't get rid of David's flaws, can you? It's not like they just threw out Samuel and Kings. So everybody knew the stories of David. They knew about Bathsheba. They knew about those things that happened with him. But there, as we think about this, we're going to look at some of the differences. And this is one of the key differences. This kind of shows us why. So we're going to look at 2 Samuel 7, 12 through 16. Later, we're going to compare it with what it says in Chronicles. But we'll just kind of briefly look at this thing. We already talked about the end, the promise to David's line. But this is what the Lord tells Nathan to tell David. When your days are over, this is to David, and you rest with your ancestors, I will raise up your offspring to succeed you, your own flesh and blood, and I will establish his kingdom. He is the one who will build a house for my name, and I will esteem the throne of his kingdom forever. I will be his father, and he will be my son. Now we're going to skip over a line because we'll see Chronicles next, but it skips it. So we're going to skip it for right now, because this is what's in common with both of them. But my love will never be taken away from him as I took it away from Saul, whom I'm removed before you, from before you. Your house and your kingdom will endure forever before me. Your throne will be established forever. So let's go ahead and show the Chronicles, okay? Speed readers, check it out. Check it out side by side if you want to, if you don't believe me. But let's go next to 2 Samuel 7, 14 to show what Chronicles leaves out. When he does wrong, I will punish him with a rod wielded by men, with floggings inflicted by human hands. He took that out in Chronicles. They just edited that part right out. Now, why would the compiler of Chronicles do that? They would do that to emphasize that it wasn't David or Solomon or somebody so far in David's line who was the messianic king, but a messianic king was still coming. And this messianic king wasn't merely going to be a saint compared to all the rest of them, but there was going to be something in him that was much more good, a reason to have a lot more hope. We're ending today with a prophesied kingdom, and we believe in the church, one of the teachings is that Jesus came to fulfill the law and the prophets, that Jesus is the fulfillment. And even though we didn't get into the New Testament and talk about the present and the proclaimed, because the kingdom that we proclaim is present, we say that it's here and not yet. And that's part of the mystery of the kingdom. Because one of the things that's not clear is at the end, the perfected kingdom, it hasn't happened yet. I think all of us can feel that keenly. We look around at the world, we look at our lives, and we know the perfected kingdom isn't here. Some of us had hoped that our lives maybe would be so much better. I think a lot of us can really identify with people and what it would be like to live in exile, that disappointment, the new Jerusalem, the new temple, and see what we hoped it would be and see it's not what we hoped, like we still have to wait for it. We can feel like those people and see life has so many more maybe disappointments. I used to think, maybe I'm wrong about this, but I used to think that life, especially following Jesus, like the pattern is kind of like this. You know, like it's a steady climb up where you just life keeps getting better, or at least you keep getting more mature. But on my end, I'll have to say for me, life has been more like the ups and the downs. The spiritual life, the life I experience. Sometimes the ups seem to outnumber the downs, and sometimes the downs seem to outnumber the ups. And that's kind of how life has been. It's in the exile. So even though maybe we're living in a different part of the kingdom than they were in the exile, I think we know what that feels like, to feel like we're in exile. I think all of us who have had that experience of feeling like, this is disappointed. I'm in exile. When's God going to do what I thought God would do? In the movie Return of the Jedi, there's this scene that I really like. Han Solo has been captured, and there's a rescue effort to go back and get him, and the hero, Luke Skywalker, goes to save Han Solo. Han is blind, and the rescue effort is not going well as Luke gets captured too. And Han is starting to get his sight back a little bit, and he gets reunited with Luke as they're heading out for execution. And there's a line where Han, who's been blind for a while, he's been asleep, he's hibernating, asks Luke Skywalker, "How we doing?" Luke says, "Same as always." And Han Solo says, "That bad, huh? So how we doing?" "Same as always." "That bad, huh?" Sometimes it feels like that. I think it felt like that in the exile, where it's like, here we go again. We thought we were going up, and it's only a way to go down again. So while we're in this phase where we believe in the king, we've seen glimpses of the king, we have hope that the future king, the once and future king, will return and set things perfect and right. While we wait for that, sometimes the downs might seem to outnumber the ups. But we proclaim, even in the midst of the downs and disappointments and heartbreaks and heartaches, we proclaim that new creation is still coming. While the kingdom of God is here and we're praying for it, there's still that element that's not yet that gives us hope that new creation is still coming, and there's a reason for us to hold on. So as we close this service out, I want to read some words from the Apostle Paul that I think would have been great for people in the exile to hear, great for us to hear in the church when we feel like we're in exile, when we feel like the downs are hitting us, when we feel like it's the same old, and that's not good. Romans 8, the Apostle Paul wrote these words: "I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. For the creation waits in eager expectation for the children of God to be revealed. For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from its bondage to decay and brought into the freedom and glory of the children of God. We know that the whole creation has been groaning as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. This is the proclaimed kingdom. The groaning is still happening even in Paul's day, even in our day. Not only so, but we ourselves who have the first fruits of the Spirit groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption to sonship and daughtership, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we were saved. But hope that is seen is no hope at all. Who hopes for what they already have? But if we hope for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently. I'm going to ask our worship team to come up and sing a song that builds on this idea. And as they do, I want to invite you to say the Lord's Prayer with me. We're going to have the words up on the screen. So we just invite you, if you're comfortable, just to pray this prayer out loud along with us. Our Father in heaven, holy is your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For yours is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen.